Well, it seems to be, but it's kind of catch as catch can, and that's a big problem. You're going to be lucky and get your test result in 24 to 48 hours, which is possible, or whether you're going to get tested for something that's you really need a test result for, and you won't get the test result back for 14 days, despite often promises that, oh, this is going to be quick. And that leaves people kind of paralyzed.
Why is it so important for the results to come back quickly?
It depends what you're using the results for, right? If it's someone who needs surgery the next day, I often joke that the best way to get a quick test is to be scheduled for an elective knee replacement the next day, because then it's in the hospital's interest to do a really quick turnaround so they can get you into the OR for a high-priced surgery. Being admitted to the hospital, you want to know if they're COVID infected because you want to put them in a certain kind of isolation. For critical workers, for example, people who work in a nursing home or assisted living place, you don't want them bringing COVID into the nursing home or assisted living. Schools are about to open. You really want to know if students are COVID-free before they infect classes and teachers. It's important to have a timely result in some cases because you need to act on it very quickly. If someone's sick with COVID, they get certain treatment. If they're going to the OR tomorrow, you need to know they're COVID negative. But in other situations where we do see long delays, it's pretty disastrous because if you're testing everyone to see whether it's safe to go back to school or safe to go back to work, what are they supposed to do? Sit there for 14 days and wait for a result? The alternative is that they go in and as many people now who are getting COVID tests think, well, it's going to be likely negative, but what if it's not? Then you've exposed a whole classroom, a whole nursing home. So it's really vital that we get these test times down and standardized.
But aside from the anxiety of not knowing what the result's going to be, how is that really different from what people generally should be doing anyway? Avoiding others, maintaining distance, wearing a mask, and that sort of thing.
Yes, it's good to take precautions, but there are levels of precautions, right? I wrote for the New York Times the story about how I had my kids come meet me for a beach vacation, right? And I had them get tested before they came down because they had participated in some protests in New York. And it made sense. You know, we wanted them to not have to wear a mask when they were around us. But guess what? One of the test results didn't come back for 12 days. And my son, you know, not a great hardship, but he had to wear a mask 24/7 in the house. We couldn't eat with him. He couldn't help prepare dinner. So if you're going to visit an older relative or someone who's immunocompromised, you really want to know if you're COVID positive or negative because it will impact the way you behave. And likewise, if you work in a nursing home or an assisted living place, it really does impact how you behave. You go to a different level. I mean, if you're positive for COVID and you work in those situations, you should not be going to work, you know, gloves, masks, hand sanitizers, and everything else, you should not be in contact because all the precautions we can take, while they're important for those, well, probably not positive cases or negative cases, if you are positive, they are not enough. If you are positive, you need to isolate.
Issues with testing have pretty much been with us throughout the crisis. I'd like to go back a few months, almost to the outset of the pandemic, at least in the U.S., tests were in very short supply, and regardless of the president's statement that anyone who wanted a test could get one, people really couldn't. Why?
The initial reason that this was a new virus and they needed to develop tests, then there were a series of missteps and bungles. The first tests, which we knew worked, were distributed not to the hot spots, but kind of randomly to federal health centers around the country. Then we found out that one of the reagents in those had been contaminated. Then, you know, a test is not like one thing. You need swabs, you need PPE, you need the right reagents to do it. So it was like saying, oh yeah, we sent you a computer, but we forgot to put in the keyboard. You need it all. You need the whole thing to make it work. It just was terribly coordinated. And part of the problem, frankly, is that in many other countries, there's been a national testing strategy that was tightly coordinated and choreographed by the central government. In the U.S., the administration's answer to this was, every hospital, you figure it out. Every state, you figure it out. And it was really an impossible task because you had these poor, you know, sourcing people in states and in hospitals often competing with each other for swabs, for reagents. Who has the tests? And this was as the number of tests was ramping up. So, you know, places that thought, oh my gosh, maybe we will get COVID even if we don't have it now, they ordered a whole lot of stuff. So New York, where there was a lot of COVID, couldn't get the amounts they needed. It was really, really a total mess and continues to be, but in different ways. Now there's a lot more testing out there. There are a lot of testing sites. It's easier to get a test, almost too easy, one could argue. But then you can't get the results. So what's the point of having a test if you don't know what the results are for 10 to 14 days? It's really, really diminished.
That was certainly something that was going on at the beginning of this crisis, where there was sort of rationing of tests. For quite some time, people were denied tests unless they could say they had traveled to China. And that was after it had already become fairly well established here in the U.S. Now, at least in California, there was talk recently of having some restrictions on who could get tested just so that they could reduce the wait time. Is there a right answer here?
Well, I think one thing we could ask is, was the notion that anyone who wants a test can get a test the right thing to be saying, given this was a new virus, a new test, and we knew there were shortages. We don't say anyone who wants a strep test can get a strep test. You have to have a reason to want a strep test. So I think, you know, where a number of places are heading now is, okay, let's think, what are the priorities for testing? So obviously people who have symptoms, people who need them for work, people who have had exposure and want to make sure they haven't converted to positive, acquired the virus, people who want to protect relatives who they're visiting. But what we saw happening, particularly, and I'm a New Yorker, in New York was when the logic was, oh, anyone who wants a test can have one now. All these testing centers opened. They were commercially run, many of them. People went in just like, oh, I want to know. I had a dinner last week. I'm curious. And those people, the kind of curious, worried well, often could get two or three or four tests because there was no, well, why do you need this test at many places? That really increases the backlog at a time when we need to prioritize how we use testing. So, you know, maybe there will be a point, and there should be a point, where we can say, oh, anyone who wants a test can get one. But I think what we need to do right now is say anyone who needs a test, who has a good reason to have a test, can get one. And some of the hospitals were doing that. You had to call a doctor first and say, this is why I want to get a COVID test. And you could only schedule an appointment if you had some reason. And the reason could have been pretty low level, like I was at a protest last week and I worry that I got some exposure there. But you couldn't go back a second time a week later and go, oh, now I want another one. So I think we have to be smart about how we use testing, given that at the moment we clearly don't have the capacity to say everyone who wants a test can get one. Now, and that's a second question which we should talk about is, why don't we have the capacity?
That is a good question. Initially, the issue was tests. Now the issue is labs and not being able to process the incredible volume of tests.
So if you say everyone who wants a test can get one, the capacity to stick swabs up people's noses galore in many cities now, but there isn't the back-end capacity to process them. And that's a really, really important problem because, you know, many of the testing centers are getting paid, as in the case of my kids, $300 to stick the swab up your nose. So they have the incentive to throw the doors open wide, right? It come one, come all. But if they can't promise you a 48-hour turnaround, why are they doing it? And that's what we're seeing now. You know, they take in a lot of swabs, send them to these big labs that just don't have the capacity to process them. That is kind of money wasted, time wasted, and not just anxiety, but people making bad decisions in that time while they're waiting because they don't have real results. And just to give you a little example, a friend of one of my children was coming back on a highway, saw a sign for free testing. Everyone in the car got tested. They'd been social distancing and careful. 6 days later, they get a result that's positive. But in those 6 days, you know, they'd assumed they were going to be negative and, you know, lived with a few roommates, weren't careful at home, and exposed a bunch of people. So if we're going to test, we need to get results back in a timely manner.
I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier. Delays in testing have also touched you personally. In an op-ed you wrote for the New York Times, you described a trip full of precautions, anxiety, and uncertainties, and as it turned out, it was all thankfully over nothing. Can you describe your experience a little, and if you feel comfortable, speculate on the outcome if perhaps your son turned out to be positive and you and your family were maybe a little less cautious?
Yeah, you know, I'm a physician. I consulted with a friend who's an infectious disease doctor, said, we want to have a nice beach vacation with my kids who were in their 20s. They both participated in protests in New York. And, you know, we had an elaborate strategy of this is the day they should get tested. We'll have them wear masks and take precautions until the tests come back negative. And, you know, they were both guaranteed that the tests would come back within 48 hours. Well, my son, when he came down to meet us, having taken elaborate precautions of, you know, masking, sanitizing to get to the beach, still didn't have a test result. So we were lucky. I had rented a COVID-era friendly house that had a little guest cottage out back with a bed. So I said, until your test results come back, you have to stay out back. And, you know, it meant that we didn't hug. He didn't participate in cooking dinners. At meals, we had to eat outside, and he sat at the far end of a picnic table, and we squirted ketchup on his burger for him. And we were extremely careful. It wasn't a disaster. I mean, we had a decent time because we were careful, and I hadn't seen them for months. His test result didn't come back for 12 days. By day 10, I knew he was no longer infectious, so I let him take off the mask. So we acted as if he could be infectious the whole time, so there was no harm done. I think other people who were not maybe as neurotic or as medically oriented as me would have said, this is ridiculous. We're sick of not letting you in the house. Come on in, take off your mask. If his result had been positive after all that time, we would have all been exposed. And some of us are of an age and have conditions that would have put us at heightened risks.
In recent days, governments have been contracting with additional labs, and that's helped clear up some of this backlog. Are you seeing any trends where the delays are getting shorter? And I'm also curious how other countries were able to handle this so successfully, especially, for instance, South Korea.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there are a lot of claims that test waits are getting shorter, and certainly I think at the beginning of this, a lot of testing sites were sending their swabs to a few commercial labs that got really backed up. So we hear that they've tried to diversify which labs they're sending to some smaller ones. But I can tell you, you know, we're still hearing at Kaiser Health News about long waits. Governor Cuomo of New York wrote a piece about how New York had solved the testing waits problem. And there were a lot of comments saying, I just waited 14 days. So I think, you know, governments and hospitals are learning from this experience and diversifying their back-end capabilities to run the tests. But I don't think we've solved the problem. And the bigger problem for patients is when you go into a test site that says, we're going to provide a free COVID test for you. You don't know at that time, are you going into one that's done a really good job of, you know, having a lab at the ready to process that? Or are you going into one that says, don't worry, it'll be back in 48 hours, and you're still sitting there at 14 days? My thinking is that any test site that takes the swab should be able to guarantee to you that it will be back in 48 hours, so it's a usable result. And if they can't, they shouldn't be taking the swab.
How did other countries handle this so successfully, like, for instance, South Korea?
Well, they had a national testing plan. I mean, at the very beginning of the COVID outbreak, the South Korean government pulled together a bunch of test manufacturers and said, we will guarantee, we will buy the tests, we will direct the testing. So there was a guaranteed market. And so it was a nationally coordinated testing strategy. Here, unfortunately, we've left this to the private market. And so one testing site may have been really smart about how they sourced their testing materials and another not. One might have the reagents today, but next week they're scrambling and they can't find any to buy because the state next door has gotten all of them. So there was no national coordination in this. It's a terrible mess, and it's gone on for way too many months now.
Dr. Rosenthal, I'm sort of out of questions, and I'm wondering if there's anything you wanted to add or any good questions that I should have asked and haven't, and I'm sure there are plenty.
One thing that may provide a partial solution to this problem is now we rely very, very heavily on the PCR tests, which are expensive, they're harder to run, and they do take longer to come back. You need the swab up the nose. The antigen tests, which are starting to come on the market, are not as specific for this coronavirus. They only take a drop of blood. They can have results back in, less than half an hour. And so it may be for populations where you think the likelihood of a virus is low, the incidence is low, you can use those tests to screen. And particularly if you do two or three over the course of a week, you will get the kind of accuracy you get with a PCR test. So again, the market for that is not yet as developed. And again, we're in this kind of craziness of every testing site uses a different test. Some are moving to antigen tests, some aren't. And we just really need a national testing plan where we decide which patients are the priority who need the PCR test, which kind of situations can we use the antigen screen, and we need clarity for schools, for companies, for states about what's the best way to go about this. And I know, Dr. Fauci has some ideas, the testing coordinator has some ideas, but right now it's really kind of every man for himself. And I know, I work for the Kaiser Family Foundation, which is a health research foundation, has no relation to Kaiser Permanente, by the way. And even my foundation, which is filled with researchers, public health people, we're struggling to figure out what's the smart way to use testing to reopen.
Is pooled testing sort of part of the answer?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about pooled testing. To me, yes, it may provide somewhat of an answer. The fact that we're now talking about relying on pooled testing shows us how badly we failed at doing smart individual testing. Pool testing tells you there's COVID out there somewhere in this population, but it doesn't really tell you who.
For those who aren't familiar with it, pooled testing would be sort of combining a small part of the samples from, let's say, 10 people, and if that sample comes back negative, then you consider all of them clear, and if they get a positive hit, then they would go back and test each of those 10 individually and find out which person is positive.
Right. So it's a sign of our failure to do what is actually the right thing. Yes, it's a backstop and it's okay, but we really should be focusing on what other countries have managed to do, which is a comprehensive, smart testing program that gives people the results they need to act in this very difficult time.